Seen, heard, and paid. It's what we all hope for when we start a new job. But for marginalized workers, a group I count myself part of, it often feels like an unattainable goal. When I began at what I imagined would be my dream job, as an editor at the New York Times, I thought this would be that moment when I would finally overcome the boundaries of privilege and have access to what should be these three basic worker rights. But I clearly remember the moment when I realized that even at a liberal bastion like the Times, it was too much to hope for. I was sitting in a meeting, the purpose of which was to kick off a new initiative in partnership with another group in the newsroom. My team colleagues and I had just introduced ourselves and explained what our roles were and what we did on a daily basis to keep the team moving forward. We talked about our responsibilities and how we all worked together. Overall, it was fine, until a colleague showed up late. Because he came in at the tail end of the introductions, everyone stopped, and our manager introduced him and told him to fill in the other team on what he did. Without dropping a beat, he proceeded to describe himself as the person responsible for all the work that I had just said that I did, and not as my peer, but as my manager, something that everyone in the room knew was explicitly untrue. Imagine it. If a peer on your team, who is less experienced than you are, but is known for being louder, walked in after you had just explained the roles and responsibilities of your job, and then claimed to do not only what they actually do, but also what you do, and then claimed to essentially be your supervisor, you would probably be livid. And yeah, I was. I stared daggers at our manager, hoping that she would step up and correct the record, or at least point out that we worked together. But she did no such thing. I looked around the rest of the room, all white faces, and realized that no one was going to help out on my behalf. I got some side glances, especially from the people on the other team who could tell exactly what was happening. But my own teammates were not going to back me up. Now I had two choices. I could speak up on my own behalf or keep quiet. If I spoke up, I knew I'd come across as an aggressive, angry black man in a room full of white men and women, some of whom had already proven to me that they weren't particularly interested in my voice, opinions, work, or experience anyway. If I stayed quiet, I'd bury all those feelings of being walked on, ignored, and openly disrespected way down deep, where all the other moments of previous marginalization were kept. And that was what I chose. But I regret keeping my silence in that room and having to suck it up as I did. I wish I had the tools then to find a way to speak up, either in that room or later with my manager, but I opted for the safe route instead. And sadly, silence is often viewed as compliance. To get to that moment of crystal clear, blatant marginalization, I had worked in many office settings that had offered their own rules on how to work around both people's prejudices and those of the institutions. First, it was while I was doing IT, mostly support, helping people fix their computers and work more efficiently. Then I went to grad school, earned a business degree, and got a new job, and with it, a promotion to a new world of responsibilities, project management. I worked as a project manager long enough to learn how to handle multiple projects and demanding clients, and how to help my colleagues do their best work when everything was on fire and everything was high priority. I thank a rather high-maintenance and high-energy chief information officer, CIO, for those skills, to be honest. Working for him was both frustrating and empowering. I learned a ton, and eventually turned what was then my side hustle, tech journalism, into a full-time job, and I brought those skills with me. Tech journalism was a new world that was full of some of the same pressures. How many stories can we file this week? Will we meet our deadlines? How do we organize all our editorial priorities? But with different people and a different audience, many of whom desperately needed help with the same kinds of situations I'd muddled through in my career in technology. So I started to tackle and blend two of my favorite topics, productivity and technology. And it just so happened I landed at an outlet that traded in that kind of advice, Lifehacker,